Hello and welcome to the ASB Investment Podcast, a show that keeps you up to date on the markets and helps you make smart choices with your investments. These are entirely our own views and that of our guests. It's not investment advice, but we know plenty of experts at ASB that'll be happy to chat if you need.
Okay, well, welcome to the latest episode of the ASB Investment Podcast. I'm your host, Nigel Grant, Head of Wealth Product here at ASB. We have a very special show today as we celebrate 2 years, or thereabouts of 2 years. I think it comes up in July, of our partnership with BlackRock. On this episode, we have Jax Mitchell, our GM, or General Manager of Wealth Distribution here at ASB, and also David Griffith, our, well, BlackRock's Head of Multi-Asset Solutions and ASB's Portfolio Manager for BlackRock. How are you both?
Kia ora. Good, thank you.
I'm very good. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's great to be in the studio today rather than on Teams. Yep. We've already been riffing about how much better it is to be in person. Now, Jax, you were saying you haven't been on the podcast before. I thought you had. So welcome for the first time.
Thank you.
And you're based in Wellington. And I was joking with you on the way over here about how cold it is in Auckland, and you're saying it's actually not. But tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and anything. What's the best part of living in Wellington?
Thank you. So new to the podcast, so thank you very much for the invite. So I'm the GM for Wealth at ASB. I'm 2 years into ASB, but have had a long career in banking and finance. Yeah, we're actually funny. Everyone in the office this morning has been talking about how jolly cold it is in Auckland today, and it's actually just a beautiful Wellington-type day. I am a big fan of Wellington Hills, so generally you'll find me walking, running somewhere around the Wellington Hills, so that's one of my favourite things about living there.
I was down in Wellington for the Ed Sheeran concert. Not that I'm a massive fan, but my daughter is, and we did the Botanic Gardens.
Nice.
And the hills, and I think I was there after I'd read your article on Insight about the Wellington Hills, and I was like, I can see why she likes it.
Yeah,
and they're remarkably close.
Yeah, it's all on our doorstep, which is super cool.
And David, welcome back to Auckland.
Thank you.
Is there anything that stood out to you about New Zealand and Auckland during this visit versus other visits, or anything you are raving about on this visit?
Actually, you mentioned the weather. So the weather has been fantastic this visit. Hasn't been too cold. I usually like to start my day by doing a bit of a run. So I like, Auckland's fantastic. So I love running, and I like boats and sailing. So like for me, running up and down around the harbour there is beautiful. And I ran to the end there and I just saw this row of beautiful old wooden boats that I just stood there and thought, wow, that's amazing. So that was a bit of a highlight for me. And then last night, actually, on the news, I did learn something about New Zealand, which is kind of related to Australia, is they started talking about wallabies. I'm thinking, are they talking about the rugby? But there's apparently a wallaby, you know,
infestation
maybe is the word. And I was like, leave the wallabies alone, you know, they're fluffy, tiny, you know, little animals. And but yeah, I can understand, obviously, they're not native to New Zealand, but you should just get the All Blacks in there, they'll sort them out.
That's right.
Sure. There's not any in the Wellington Hills, is there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Wallabies, no.
Check next time.
Thanks.
Now, Jax, to your role with distribution and obviously wealth, I know you have a wider role than just wealth as well, but in particular, some of the listeners might work with an ASB Wealth Advisor. Kind of, do you want to expand, just give a brief overview of your role? Maybe what are the things customers are talking to you specifically about since you've come into it?
Yeah, thank you. I think the biggest piece that I want, the biggest change I want to make is just that we reach more of our ASB customers with advice. I think that's the biggest thing I hear is, how do I get advice? Or maybe that's for a different type of customer, not me. So I think for my job to do would be to make sure we can reach more of our customers, make sure they understand what advice means, and to help them grow financially. If we can do that better and reach more of our customers, I think that would be a great outcome. Yeah. And partnered with BlackRock, obviously, is a huge benefit for us.
There's actual advice, and there's probably talking to you know, a mate or relative, right?
Yep, 100%. Yeah, you're exactly right. I think there's validation of that. You know, there's the barbecue type conversation. What are you getting into? What about these shares? What about diversification? But I think all of this advice is free. It's all available to ASB customers. So I would urge anyone just to make sure you can get in front and spend an hour to understand what the options are.
And those advisors benefit, obviously, amongst a lot of other things, from BlackRock. Now, David, I've had the pleasure of working with you for about 2 years or so. And then we were just talking before we started recording about you were presenting at an ASB event that I helped organise before we knew each other. So it's probably extended a little bit further than that.
Sure.
We've probably recapped on the podcast before what you do. But again, just for those that are tuning in for the first time or have forgotten, your role, a little bit of expansion about it, and its core part within ASB.
Yeah, sure. So my role, I'm head up the solutions business for BlackRock in Australasia. So my role is really to deliver solutions to clients, and I'm the client CIO. So essentially the buck stops with me in terms of investment performance for the ASB portfolios. When you think about the partnership, you know, it is certainly one that we describe as insourcing BlackRock's investment team. A lot of people describe it as outsourcing OCIO. But really, we work really closely with, you know, John Smith and the ASB investment team. And it's really, you know, the extension of the investment team and insourcing all of BlackRock's capabilities. So really, my role is to bring all of that to bear from an investment perspective to the ASB portfolios.
And just so everyone on the podcast knows, CIO is Chief Investment Officer?
Correct. That's right. Sorry for the terminology. And yes, that's right.
I'm just trying to break it down where I can, because I know it, but I'm just conscious that others might not. And just other expansion, what would you say would be a day-to-day, some of the key things day-to-day you might do for the partnership?
Wow. Okay. Where do I start? Sure. I mean, look, the primary responsibility is delivering better investment performance to customers. So we're obviously very focused on markets. Yeah. So look, I mean, a typical day in the life of us at BlackRock and the investment team is really, you know, where we all get up in the morning and we look at what markets have done overnight. This morning I was up looking at what CPI was released last night in the US. And then, you know, having a discussion with the team and sort of seeing if there's anything we need to action in the portfolios. There is always, because we are managing the day-to-day rebalancing of the portfolios, so customer inflows, customer outflows, currency hedging, all of those things need to happen every single day. So we've got the hands on the tools every single day, rebalancing the portfolios, making sure that they're all in compliance with all the guidelines, and then bigger picture, sort of thinking, how else can we, you know, add value to customers and other areas around marketing and things like this as well. Yep. It's part of the day job. So yeah, look, it's really all encompassing.
And Jack, since you've come into the role, what would you say are some of the things that has stood out to you about the partnership? Is there anything that sort of, you know, you've been impressed by or noticed first?
I think the willingness to embrace the partnership and say, what more can we do? I think one of the things that's absolutely top of mind for me is, how do I make sure that the partnership is unique to ASB? We've purposefully done that. We've got one of the largest global investment managers partnering with us. We're powered by BlackRock. How do we bring that much more to the fore? How do we make sure customers understand what's the so what of that? What does that mean? And how can that add value to our customers? That's the biggest thing, I think, for me to do, is to make sure that that's really visible. And again, you know, the opportunity to work really closely together, this is an example of how we make sure that that is more visible.
Yeah. It strikes me as a bit ironic or unlucky, or lucky perhaps, but perhaps even coincidental, but the partnership happened or was founded in what could be described as one of the most challenging periods for markets that we've gone through in the last decade, perhaps even back to the financial crisis. David, over these last 2 years of kind of the partnership relationship, you know, what about this period and events has led, or what stood out to you in terms of the things that we've done to manage clients' money through that period?
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, I'll take you back all the way back to the inception of when the partnership began. I remember this was pre-lockdown, pre-COVID. So John Smith and Adam Boyd flew over to Sydney and sat down with us. And I remember John distinctly saying, we want to make the boat go a bit faster. We want to make the boat go faster. And I've always remembered that comment.
Well, you're a boating aficionado.
We're boating. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I even put one of the early presentations, our marketing team sent us the presentation. They had some other graphic in the presentation. I said, no, that needs to be. So I went and sourced a graphic of a sailing boat and put it in just for John. That would have been early 2020, just before COVID broke out. And that probably was the last time that, the team came over to see us, or we weren't able to come here. So the whole onboarding process happened during COVID. And I remember doing, you know, multiple meetings per week with John and the team and the whole team, just really getting a deep understanding of ASB, the portfolios, the investment objectives, and how we can help, you know, add value to the portfolios. So it was quite a long process there, but having to navigate all the things you mentioned. Like, I remember one of the first sort of changes we made to the portfolio was during that COVID period, and we were sort of, it's quite clinical to talk about it now, but we were watching, you know, watching case numbers in every single country. You know, our quant teams have built these dashboards of, you know, all the medical information and how the case numbers were unfolding and all these things. And we were trying to make, you know, assessments from an economic perspective about what that means, who's going to be first to reopen. We thought that was going to be a positive thing, boost economic growth. So then, and trying to position the portfolios for that reopening story. So I remember the first construct of the portfolio, we got a bit more aggressive in terms of the growth outlook. And this was around, I think it was around sort of mid 2021. Mm-hmm. And that is when things started to, you know, reopen and equity markets, you know, had a really strong rally in the back half of that year. So that was, you know, I remember that being the right position to have in the portfolio.
And Jack, some of the, I guess some of the themes or derivatives that have come out of that period, like inflation, cost of living, you know, volatility and what it's doing to returns and impacting portfolios. What has stood out as kind of, is there a standout theme that clients have, you know, been talking to you that's either still on their mind or was one of the key issues during that time?
Yeah, I think definitely what we're hearing now is the lean towards a conservative approach and safety in term deposits. That's probably one of the biggest themes that I'm hearing. So I think, again, it's our job to be talking about how that fits into a diversified portfolio, as opposed to just thinking I can get a 5 or 6% return and certainty. It's about, yes, we've seen 2 years plus of volatility. What does that look like and how does that form part of a portfolio as opposed to all eggs in one kind of term deposit bucket? Yeah, basket rather, yeah.
Do you want to go there now? A response in terms of the TD or cash?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, yeah, like I can sort of understand from a customer's perspective that, you know, investing in term deposits, obviously cash rates have risen quite dramatically. But if you've got a long-term or medium to long-term investment horizon, it's really important to understand how this new environment that we're in, where we've got high inflation, what that means for your savings in a real perspective. So after, you know, inflation adjusted. So while a 6%, you know, cash rate or term deposit rate sounds really great, the fact of the matter is inflation's running at 6.7% in New Zealand. So you're actually falling behind in real terms. And to try to keep up with inflation and to seek better returns, you know, you really need to take a little bit of risk and invest in other asset classes that can earn you a better return. And despite all the doom and gloom and all the uncertainty, you know, we're still quite constructive in terms of the medium to long-term outlook for global markets, for equity markets relative to bonds, et cetera, and the importance of diversification. And that's our job, is really to make sure that we are positioning the portfolios to meet the return objectives. And when I look at our sort of 5-year forecasts of expected returns, we're still talking high single digit, you know, expectations for global equity markets, which is, you know, a lot better than what you can get in terms of just the cash rate return, and it gets you a positive return above inflation.
And this will give an insight into, I mean, I've expressed to our listeners how much of a nerd I am with my former reading material of the history of interest rates that I get constantly teased about at work. But my latest book is, I don't expect you to sort of have a view on it because this has sprung on our dear panel members today, but Stocks for the Long Run by Jeremy Siegel.
Okay.
So in there, he talks about the need for exactly that point, like stocks or shares, as we might know them, they are vitally important for a retiree, because you've actually probably got about, if you look at 65, maybe 25, 30 years. Mm. And he looks at the likelihood of how you might actually, if you just rely on cash, charts when you may run out of money.
That's a really good point. And I guess what you need to think about, we're all exposed to longevity risk as well. So, you know, life expectancy is increasing these days. And you think about the risk of running out of cash in your retirement and your savings, that's a real, real big issue. And you really need to be earning, putting your money to work, not exposing yourself to too much risk, but having a little bit of growth in your retirement savings in retirement to safeguard you against that longevity risk.
And I guess, Jax, that's going back to that conservatism point that I feel safe doing that move, but I guess you may not be thinking of those medium to long-term consequences.
Yeah, and I think that's a really key point, David, is about it's that question, isn't it? What's your time horizon? And if it's 3 months, happy days. If it's longer than that, then you need to be thinking about what, how do I diversify? What does a full diversified portfolio look like?
Yes.
Yeah. That strikes me as something an advisor could help with.
100%, yep. And I think, again, to my earlier point about reaching more of our ASB customers, if customers are confused and they're thinking these rates look pretty attractive and I'm not sure what my returns have been over the last couple of years, they haven't looked as good, what do I do? Then absolutely our wealth advisors can take every customer through what does your current portfolio look like, or what does cash look like relative to a diversified portfolio powered by BlackRock? What does that mean for you over the medium to long term, and getting certainty with advice?
And David, just to round out kind of this, the partnership period, what we've gone through, can you just recap what are some of the key decisions we might have made along the way, some of those flagship decisions we've made that sort of helped us navigate that period?
Yeah, so interesting. So I think for me, one of the pivotal decisions we made was at the start of 2022. So again, this is probably about 6 months into the partnership. And we have a process where we review the allocations formally on an annual basis. And we typically do that around the start of the year. Actually, and I went back, I knew I was doing this podcast, so I did go back and have a look at, I looked at my notes around the, as part of this, obviously we work very closely with Jax's team and we need to make sure that everyone's across the rationale as to why we're positioned in a certain way. And I might take the liberty. Can I read you a little bit of a...
Oh, I'd love that.
A quote. Yeah. A quote from the time. So this was in
January. Are you quoting yourself?
Okay.
Go for it.
Sorry. Okay, so let me... this is what I wrote down as part of the notes back in January 2022 in terms of the outlook and why we wanted to be a bit more conservative at that time. We knew something was brewing, right? Inflation had started picking up in the US. Cash rates in the US were at 10 basis points at this point in time. So this is my comments at the time was greater uncertainty in the outlook for 2022. Higher inflation is likely to lead central banks to start removing monetary policy accommodation with some aggressive interest rate hikes, leading to higher bond yields. This tightening of financial conditions is generally less favorable for growth assets. I wasn't aware of how less favorable it was going to be in 2022, but generally less favorable for growth assets. And in addition, there is generally more uncertainty around the future path of interest rates and interest rate increases and the potential for policy error from central banks to unwind policy stimulus that has been in place for the last several years. So, we knew something was brewing and, roll the clock forward 12 months from there and, global equities were down 18%. Global fixed income was down 12%. Bond yields were, 5 or 4% higher. And inflation was, peaked at 9% in the US. So if I think about sort of the key sort of decisions we made at that time, it was bringing in more resilience, more protection into the portfolio, particularly, adding inflation-linked bonds at that point in time. We did sort of see that inflation was going to be sticky and more structural. We still hold that view. We still think that inflation, while it is starting to peak and come down, we don't think inflation is going to come all the way back down to where central banks would like it to be in terms of their targets. And there's sort of some more structural forces at play around sort of demographics and those types of things that that can lead to sticky inflation. But certainly in terms of building that resilience, having a bit less exposure to equities at that point in time, to growth assets, so scaling that back a little bit, inflation-linked bonds, and also we brought in an allocation to gold. There was a lot of debate amongst our team around doing that at that point in time, but we did feel that we weren't going to get that diversification benefit that you would typically get from fixed income in the next downturn. And, again, it turned out to be that's played out because, obviously we've seen a re-rating both in equity markets, but a big re-rating in bond markets. The good news is going forward, fixed income looks like a much more attractive asset class than what it looked like, 12 and 18 months ago.
So it's clear now that ASB Asset Management and BlackRock are working with someone who can see the future. So can you pick my lotto numbers this week?
We'll build your model for that. All right, and okay, see how we go. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, that's a the fact to reflect on that. Yeah. What you'd said played out pretty word for word.
Yeah, like I was reading, I was thinking, oh, that's pretty good. I might use that.
You can use that in your book.
Yeah, I'm sure there was plenty of other comments in there that didn't play out. Yeah. So I only picked the one that was correct.
Don't quote it.
In hindsight.
Jex, I guess from your perspective, is there anything that we've talked about in this kind of recap section that you think maybe still is confusing for customers? That they're not sort of, you know, we could do a better job breaking down that they're telling you?
I think it's probably just, again, understanding the so what of the partnership. So what's in it for an ASB customer to have the partnership with BlackRock? I think that's probably a point that customers still need to understand, which is our job to do. So through that advice process, what's the value that we can bring forward for a customer with through the partnership and through diversified and a personal portfolio?
I sort of can't move past that quote of thyself, because that's one of the key things that what the partnership was focused on, the moves it made, was underpinned by that, which played out.
Yeah.
So...
Right? Thank you.
Let's just end the podcast
now. No pressure for the future, in terms of getting it right. But
Okay. Well, so we sometimes ask clients, or clients ask us, what are the other things that the partnership is providing, in addition to what David and Jax have mentioned already. The obvious one being how, you know, we manage and allocate funds under management to deliver those return outcomes. Investors also benefit from other activities from the partnership, so the training of our team. So that's Jax's team, particularly our wealth advisors. They work hand in hand, or the partnership BlackRock work hand in hand with our investment committee, which I'm not sure some people might not know that ASB has an investment committee for the funds under management. Access to the likes of David, the person who can see the future. And also, you know, people from BlackRock like David, Ron, Montgomery confront things in the media for us as well, which is really, really beneficial. BlackRock are also working with us on things like our climate-related disclosures, which is a massive new piece of work that all banks, for instance, there'll be ones that I've missed, but banks and fund managers of a certain size have to do. And there's also things like the liquidity management. We're getting into the real detail here. Jax, are there any things that stand out to you, you know, as the highlights? We've probably touched a little bit on this before, but again, any other highlights the partnership has brought to the table that you think we're, you know, still to utilize fully or we're using really well?
So two things. One would be what we've talked about already, which is the visibility of the partnership, and then for our customers to say, what does that mean and what value does that bring? So that absolutely number one, and the uniqueness of that partnership. And the second is, you've also touched on it, which is the capability uplift of our advisors because of the partnership. So how do we make, which is what we're doing at the moment, which is we're running day-long sessions. We're getting some amazing BlackRock team members across from the States and from Aussie to come and talk to us about obviously what's happening in the markets, but getting much, much deeper, which adds capability to our team, our advisors, which again passed on to customers. So I'm seeing the depth of knowledge is deeper again each time we interact with BlackRock, which is just awesome.
And one of the things that I always, as an aside, if listeners want to look at it, I'm not sure how it comes to, like, what form it comes to you, but I really like that weekly, the BII, the BlackRock Investment Institute update, and the way it's written. Do you, like, I guess you guys get a torrent of that stuff in-house, but it's really good to get, I guess, an idea of what's going through your mind that then your work with ASB kind of might be looking at.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, we get inundated with, you know, BlackRock is a big investment platform. And for me, sometimes, you know, the BII is great because they distill down all the views across all the different investment teams. But there are differences in terms of outlook and differences in terms of investment strategies within BlackRock. You speak to different teams. So we spend a lot of our time actually speaking with our colleagues. So our investment colleagues in Asia, our investment colleagues in New York, in London, we have regular catch-ups with, you know, investment teams all around the world. And that's how we sort of bring to bear our global best insights into the local portfolios. Yeah. So, you know, that's a big part of our job, is really just communicating with other investors across the platform.
And my final question in this segment was for you, David. Was there anything the partnership's taught you?
Ooh, anything that's taught me? Look, I think for me, just the scope of the work that we're doing, it is all those things that you mentioned. And it is really a true platform partnership. We talk about both an investment partnership, but also a technology partnership. So all that work that you mentioned around climate, and, you know, that is really complex, detailed data analysis. trying to aggregate all that data up in a portfolio context. You know, that's something that we can do because we have some fantastic portfolio management systems and
Aladdin,
yes, that's right. That helps us aggregate all that information to provide to our clients.
And just to divert once again, Aladdin is how would you describe Aladdin?
Aladdin is our risk and portfolio management platform. So it really brings everything together for us. It's our go-to day-to-day. The first thing I do, go into Aladdin and I can see the portfolios. I can see performance. I can see, in particular for me, the risk. And I can see risk in multiple different views, dimensions, and being able to go in there and just sort of understand at any point in time, you know, where we're positioned, how are we positioned, and what the risks are in the portfolio for me is extremely valuable.
So it's safe to say that all of ASB's clients' investments benefit from that expertise?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're using the Aladdin every single day to manage the portfolios, rebalancing, FX hedging, and all of those things occur within Aladdin. Yeah.
So before we close things out, a couple of my favorite questions right at the end, I thought it was worthwhile talking a little bit more about some of the improved fund performance we've seen over the past 12 to 13 months. Now, this topic is really tricky generally for managers to talk about. So I hope you'll excuse me just reading the script here as such, because it's important to go word for word just because of the industry we're in. So, but based on Morningstar data, we've seen some excellent outcomes around the uplift in peer fund ranking or peer fund performance over the past year or so. And peers mean against, you know, competitors or other funds in a specific category. Now, what we're talking about today is for our KiwiSaver and investment funds products for customers. So that's primarily what we are addressing here in this instance. The standout for me, and that's not me, that's just me ad-libbing, but the standout for me over the past 13 months to about 31st of May, it's been a very strong improvement. And we're getting to the reason why we're talking about this in terms of the impact the partnership's had. But the majority of our funds now sit in the second quartile amongst their peer group. Now, what that means is they're sitting in the second highest quarter, was the easiest explanation I could think of their grouping or their type. Now, back to April 22, the majority of these funds were in either the third or fourth quartile. So the performance has been noticeable. Now, again, the caveat that we always have to say, this is not indicative of future performance, but the trend is really fantastic to see, and it's pleasing to see that investors in those products and our wonderful clients have been benefiting from this. So, David, that's the scripted part. David, what decisions do you think have made had the biggest performance impact behind some of those results?
Yeah, look, I think the choice to be a bit more conservative during the course of 2022 helped a lot, and you know, we were a bit worried about equity markets, but equally worried about fixed income markets. And on the fixed income side of the portfolio, we actually held on to bonds with a shorter maturity, a 3 to 5 year exposure within the fixed income market, which is naturally less exposed to rises in interest rates. And that has led to, you know, a fair degree of outperformance, we think, relative to peers that are maybe in those sort of all maturity type exposures.
And Just shorter maturity means shorter date until principal is paid back?
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's right. So so that sort of, I think, has helped a lot through the course of 2022. And then there's other areas I think I mentioned earlier, you know, the decision to start investing in inflation-linked bonds. Look, I don't think anyone was forecasting where inflation actually got to. Mm. Inflation peaked at 9% in the US. You know, we do think that, again, this inflation story is going to be a bit structural, and these are long-term strategic holdings to, you know, deliver better returns, at least keep in pace with realized inflation through time. You know, the other thing that's worked really well this year is the gold investment, actually. So gold has been performing extremely well. And then the other component, which I haven't touched on yet, is around the currency. So when we do invest in global equities, for example, we typically have more of the exposure in what we call unhedged global equities, where you're not hedging the currency risk. And the good dynamic there is the New Zealand dollar is a sort of pro-growth currency. And during periods of risk-off in markets, when equity markets are declining, the New Zealand dollar typically falls. And the great thing about a currency is it's two-sided, right? So if the New Zealand dollar is falling, something else must be appreciating on the other side. And that's typically the US dollar. So, investing all else equal in global equities unhedged means that when those risk episodes occur, equities are falling, you're getting this nice dampening effect.
A cushion, as such.
Yeah, a bit of a cushion, yeah. So, but you need to be creative when you're in this environment or the environment that we're in sort of 12, 18 months ago, fixed income or bonds in Europe was still had a negative yield. Mm. So you kind of question how much further negative can they go? And, the end answer is, well, not much further, and they've gone the other way. So, we've had to think about other ways of bringing that resilience into the portfolio. So I think big picture, it's sort of being a bit more conservative in terms of the outlook when we needed to be, being a bit bold in terms of bringing some of these new asset classes into the portfolio, and thinking about other more creative ways that we can build that resilience into the portfolios.
And Jackson, the way here, we were talking about... returns. One of the things that stood out that you said was seeing some of this return improvement and the great work that the team is doing provides that confidence and certainty to customers. Do you just want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that's a great proof point, right? You know, we've talked about the partnership and what BlackRock brings, and essentially what we're saying here is that relative to peers, the performance now is really strong because of the decisions that the investment team have made. So it's a proof point around the value that we bring and ability then to be confident in the advice we're getting, partnering with BlackRock. What does that bring for ultimately the returns?
And is there any other core or critical things? I know we've talked about the advice and the benefits of having those conversations, staying on plan, but is there apart from or aside or accompanying returns, is there another core thing that stands out, that's critical to that customers should be doing?
I think it's just the relationship with the advisor. I think that's a really critical part of any plan is understanding that you can, you can contact that advisor, make sure you're on plan, get updates as to where things are at so that you've got a point of contact alongside ASB to make sure that, you're on plan, you've got the confidence. I think that's probably what I see with most customers.
Yeah, the advisor sometimes I refer to as the little, well, not little, but for this analogy, the person on your shoulder who's there to maybe talk you and counsel you out of things that you can, because if you look at a portfolio all the time and see it going a certain way, you can make undesirable decision. So I always see the advisor as the person who's the rational.
Yeah, and the probably reminding you of why we've made the decisions that we have, and that, like we talked about at the beginning, it's not a 5-minute decision. You're not making a decision for the next. It's a medium to long term plan, and that these, there will be volatility, and we've talked about what that looks like. But thinking, longer term and overall returns. And again, what we've seen in the last year is a significant change in performance, which is just awesome.
It's time to wrap up. So the final work-related question I had was, where do we expect to be in the next 12 months or so? I know we've got CPI in the States come out this morning. That being, I guess, because this will come out a little bit later. So this is Wednesday the 14th. Are there any things that you're looking mainly at for the next 12 months?
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, there's lots of things that we're looking at all the time. I think, in terms of what's been driving markets the last 18 months, it's been all about inflation and policy. Now, the good news is we're starting to come to the end of that policy journey. We've seen the RBNZ here locally, basically stating that they're going to pause interest rate hikes for the time being. You're getting the Fed sort of also reaching the end. So that will give, a bit of clear air to markets for a while. And I think the key question from here is, how much of that impact of those aggressive policy tightening, how much of that has fed through to the underlying economy? And is it actually going to have the effect of dampening down inflation without causing recession? So that's kind of the area that we're watching pretty closely at the moment.
And Jax, I guess in terms of the 12 months ahead, for probably from a customer lens and what you're seeing in your role, what do you, what could ASB customers or team members, I guess, what's the sort of things that they'll expect to see over the next year?
I think the biggest change for us is just enhancing the product suite. And we've talked previously about climate. So, what else are we bringing into those customer portfolios that can address some wider areas of interest for customers. So definitely a wider, more diverse product set that satisfy what customers are asking for at the moment. So we've got a product plan over the next 12 months which will deliver some of those enhancements to customers. More choice, yeah.
Hopefully I'm ready for that.
Get a product. Hopefully I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
And finally, so I ask all of our guests this question, which has resulted in some really great answers, aside from my own reading habits. But what's something that you're either reading, watching, or listening to at the moment that would be of interest, maybe, or, you know, something that you're finding interesting that our listeners could then check out?
Are you expecting me to answer with some, like, highly intellectual, like, fixed income textbook that you often read?
Job.
Is that that's your
that's
job?
My
job.
That's my
so,
job.
So, like, I deal with that every single day of my life and my working life. So I like to completely switch off financial markets when I'm relaxing. So, I don't know, like, I like the Formula One. I watch the Formula One. So that's my interest over the weekend. Another show I really like is actually Alone, where they drop people into the wilderness and you've got to sort of fend for yourself and feed yourself and build your shelter. And that, for me, that's something that I've started watching and it's really interesting.
Is that something you'd like to do? Escape
not really. But yeah, no, it's interesting just to see the psychological impact that it has on people and how they deal with it. That's the hardest part they find. It's really interesting.
I think if there's an extrovert, that would drive me absolutely potty. In the wilderness.
Being alone in the...
For days on end. Exactly.
Who can I talk to? It's just this rock and this tree.
I haven't got anything terribly interesting in terms of what I'm watching or reading, but I have got the... I'm going to start LeBron, so I haven't... I've heard some great stories about how that book has... just his whole life and career.
Is there a book coming out?
Yeah, not yet out.
Has he got a book coming out?
As a 16-year-old, never played in the NBA, he then gets sort of, you know, $50 million contracts and he has to make decisions as a 16-year-old. And I'm looking forward to reading that. And secondly, when I'm in the hills, I tend just to listen to lots of probably girly type Pink music and just... dancey kind of.
Well, you're exercising, right?
Yeah, so with a good beat. So that's probably what I do.
People, listeners might know that I love gardening while listening to investment podcasts. There's nothing I like more than trimming a hydrangea, learning about what's happening. This is serious. Well, thank you both for coming along today. So we've hit all the questions. We've covered all the topics. I just want to thank you both for, you know, giving up your time to talk to me, talk to our customers. I just want to do a little plug for some upcoming podcasts we have. Now, in and amongst our normal podcast, sort of monthly one we have out that covers, you know, key topics, markets, what's been happening out there, we're also going to be launching a little sub bonus series on what is or who is ASB Wealth. That's a bit of a 101 series. So for those that are a little bit like, what are some of the terms and what is ASB talking about here, that little sub-series will be useful to, get a 101 on what we actually do, some of the terms, who's involved. But that will be in addition to our normal podcast series. So that's a little plug for that. But apart from that, I want to thank you again, you both, for coming along.
Awesome, thank you.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the ASB Investment Podcast. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, or if there's anything you'd like us to discuss on a future show, get in touch at podcasts@asb.co.nz.
Interest in the ASB KiwiSaver Scheme and ASB Investment Funds, or the schemes, are issued by ASB Group Investments Limited, a wholly owned subsidiary of ASB Bank. ASB provides administration and distribution services for the schemes. No person guarantees interest in the schemes. Interest in the schemes are not deposits or other liabilities of ASB. They are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of income and principal invested. For more information, see the ASB KiwiSaver Scheme Product Disclosure Statement or the ASB Investment Funds Product Disclosure Statement available at asb.co.nz and the Register of Offers of Financial Products at www.discloseregister.companiesoffice.govt.nz and search for ASB.